As you know, we at this channel, we consider ourselves unintimidated and uncompromised to bring you the truth, no matter what it is. And we bring you all sides of an issue. We show you what American side are saying, European side, Russian side, Iranian side, Europeans, et cetera, all different kinds of side. Whatever the topic is, we make sure you get all of it. We have long sound bites so you don't have to you know, worry about things getting clipped, that you'd lose the context or whatever. And then you get to make up your decide. We say what we think about it. You get a chance to make up your own mind. That is not the way the mainstream media is operating these days. And unfortunately, it is really making a big problem for misinforming the American public. And it is hard to figure out what's really going on when people are trying to tell you the truth, because they're going to bring their own biases. We bring our own biases as well. I don't deny that. But we try to bring you a balanced view. But when one specific network is apparently putting a concerted effort to disinform the American public, to make them believe something that's not true, and to highlight and to make things appear to be true that aren't, we have a real problem here. Because instead of informing the public, we are blinding the public to the reality. And there was one particular relatively short single segment last night on Fox News with Jesse Waters that really encapsulated this and shows what we've been showing here for a recent past, where it's like almost every guest on Fox News is singing the praises of war, that they're saying we can win this, we can finish this war, etc. All the stories are about going back to war full scale with Iran, even though we're telling you all the facts and all the military realities, the geopolitical realities, the geographic and geologic realities are, it's insane and it's a foolhardy thing to do. But you would never know that from watching Fox. And I want to just show you a number of key things along with the reality behind what they're not telling the public, is to just show you so graphically why this is such a problem. Let's start off, first of all, where Jesse Waters was talking about Hegseth last, and showed a soundbite. He showed a number of soundbites. Some of them we're going to show you here, where he was talking about basically Iran is so weak right now.
Iran is at the weakest point militarily it has ever been in the past decade, certainly maybe in 47 years, as they've gathered effectively a terror army. So well, I acknowledge clearly, they still have capabilities, no doubt. But the amount of damage that we've done to them over the course of these series of operations has put them in the worst place they've ever been.
I mean, that's just self-evidently off. There's no way that's true. If that was true, we wouldn't have just lost four service members. There wouldn't have been a dignified transfer at Dover Air Force Base just a little bit ago today. We wouldn't continue to be suffering shot after shot after shot on all of our bases if they were as weak as they were since 1947, or in the last 47 years. That would be self-evident, not true. But this whole idea, this is an intentional statement here. They're as weak as they've ever been. And if that sounds familiar to you, it should, because this goes all the way back to before the war started. Here is Jack Keane on February 1st, so almost 4 weeks before the war actually started, driving that point home.
We know for a fact that based on what events are in front of us, the regime is the weakest it's ever been. A military strike will weaken that regime further, create divisiveness inside of the regime itself. How long are we going to put up with the mullahs doing this when they're putting so much at risk for ourselves and our way of life? I'm talking about the elites that keep the regime propped up. That is the opportunity.
Yeah, that's the opportunity, he said. And he was begging President Trump to take that opportunity. They're as weak as they've ever been. They're going to fall apart. That was a common theme for him all the weeks prior to this launch. And yet, that's now what Secretary of War Pete Hegseth is saying yesterday. And yet, look, you don't have to be a genius to just look. This is the map. This is just a one-week snapshot of, you know, just the last couple of days here, of all of these American bases throughout the region that have been hit. Does that look to you like somebody who is as weak as they've been in 47 years, which is the same claim made before the war? And it wasn't true then either, because they just unleashed holy hell on Israel, on our Gulf allies, and on us, all of our air defenses, the Iron Dome, the David Sling, the THAAD system, you name it. None of it stopped the missiles, and we were crushed in that. That's why we had to go to a ceasefire. And yet, that passes. That's what we're told. So that's not just Fox News. Obviously, that is the administration's attempt to misinform you. Further on in that, Jesse Waters also put up there a comment on the whole issue with Pickaxe Mountain. If you're not tracking on that, that is what Israeli intelligence alleges here in just the last few days. That, oh, you know what? Out of nowhere, all of a sudden, turns out that those three bases that we destroyed in Operation Midnight Hammer, where they had their alleged nuclear missile program, turns out they actually secretly moved it up to another place called Pickaxe Mountain. And so Senator Kennedy wanted to ask Secretary of War Hegseth, can we get at it?
Guys, we need straight answers. We need straight answers. Do we have the ability to destroy whatever is underneath Pickaxe Mountain?
A lot of our capabilities are classified, but if anybody in the world can reach anything on this, on God's green earth, it's the United States military, the most powerful military in the world. It's all about options and trade-offs.
Yeah, it's not just about options and trade-offs. And no, I mean, that was about as weak of a non-answer as even Hegseth gets. Usually he just goes on to full-on fiction, but at least this time he tried to hedge. But listen, he didn't have to, because and Senator Kennedy doesn't need to ask that question because it has been conclusively answered. I mean, look, this is back from May. This is May 31st. Iran's reopened underground missile sites show the limits of U.S. bombing, because even though we hit a bunch of stuff on the surface, this is literally graphically what I keep telling you, all these pictures of things that you hit on the surface of a mountain, but underneath that mountain, it doesn't matter what you do on the surface because you can't get at this stuff here. And yet there's Secretary Hegseth just lying to people and trying to, instead of just making it up, he gave this impression, you know, if there's anybody on God's green earth that can get that done, it's the United States military, which, by the way, is the most powerful military. Look, if we were the most powerful military force on the planet, then you'd be able to get through that. But you can't. And look, it's a mountain. Nobody expects a conventional missile to destroy a mountain. Even a nuclear weapon is not going to have an effect on that. These things are designed to survive nuclear weapons, just like our underground facilities are. You're not going to do it. That's not a ding on the military per se. Just say because we can't do that, that we can't get it. But the problem is, if he admits that, then that exposes the entire mission is a fraud. Because we're supposed to say we're going to take control of the Strait of Hormuz. And we keep saying over and over, we can't do that. That is outright fiction. But if you admit that you can't get at this missile factory, and there, according to Professor Morandi, closer to 50 of these things, not just 30 that we have heard about. He claims there's 50 of them. Whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. There's a bunch of them. We can't get at them. They've been prepared over decades of time to put forth in just this moment. And now they're having the payoff, because they had patience and strategic foresight to look around and see what the environment, what the future was going to be like, and build something over decades. Now then it's having a payoff, because we can't knock it out. And if you admit that, then you admit that the mission is unattainable. That's why he has to hedge. But it shouldn't be able to pass. Senator Kennedy should have said then what I'm saying now, then we can't win this war. If you can't get at whatever's under Pickaxe Mountain, that means you can't get after any of them. And we haven't been able to, as the information shows, as this shows. Because without this, that's where all these missiles are coming from, if you're not tracking. They took everything. Nothing's above ground anymore. Everything is coming from these underground facilities, which we can't get at. And here's what they can do with that. Then we move on to, let's move on down the list of here, because the next thing on here was Secretary Hegseth said, look, in terms of negotiations, so I guess he also can't admit that we can't get after, we can't not knock out their missile factories, because then the whole mission, military mission, is undone. Well, if you admit that, then you don't have any leverage in the negotiations, but we're going to pretend like that doesn't work, and we're also going to pretend like we have plenty of leverage, and as a matter of fact, as long as the Iranians behave, we'll consider talking.
The United States says they're not coming back into the table until the Iranians show they're serious.
Iran's been given every opportunity to negotiate, to show that they're reasonable on the Strait of Hormuz. But if they're going to shoot at commercial shipping, then we're going to hit them, as the president said, 10 times harder, which every night we're degrading them further and further. And the president has all the options necessary. If they want to talk, they can talk. Otherwise, they can deal with the War Department.
Yeah, really. I think they've been dealing with the War Department pretty effectively, said Mr. Secretary. And by the way, you said on there that, listen, as long as they behave, and one of the examples is that they're attacking civilian shipping in the Strait, those darn bad persons and those that awful thing that they're doing. Oh, wait a minute. Turns out here just a few days ago, that's what we were doing here. This is a public release by Central Command admitting that U.S. aircraft disabled a civilian vessel after firing Hellfire missiles into the ship's smokestack. So what this, and I showed you this, the duplicity coming from the Central Command within a matter of, I think it was 48 hours where we first announced that strike. And then we announced that we had struck Iran because they were going after civilian shipping, not even blushing about the grotesque double standard. But look, people are aware of it. I'm not the only one here. Now, you are too, of course. But when you cite as justification why they're bad, and then you put out an official press release, that's what we're doing too. Then you shred and just erase any possibility of even the echo or a shadow of moral grounds to be able to say the other side should do something. People are aware of this. People aren't stupid. And the more we do these kind of things that are just out there in the open, no one's going to be paying any attention to us. It's going to just be, all right, we'll do what you say when we have no physical choice. But if we have any say in the matter, we're going to do something different because otherwise we're going to get consumed. That's just how the thing has worked out. But nobody's going to do it because it's, quote, the right thing or because we have any moral standings, because we have destroyed that. And I would say destroyed. No one believes anything anymore other than just people who are blindly going to follow the United States no matter what. And that's including some in and outside of the country. They'll just stay reflexively, whatever the U.S. says. They'll just take it at face value and just ignore all of the grotesque contradictions. Then the next thing here is he said, by the way, there's also an issue on these the oil facilities and on the oil pipelines. One of the big problems with getting control of the Strait of Hormuz has been the Yanbu pipeline or the Yanbu port for the Saudi Arabian pipeline across. It was also one over Oman and through the UAE that would allow the oil to go out through the Gulf of at the Fajr report port. You may recall that was allowing stuff to go out through the Gulf of Oman. Iran has now closed off that. And now, at least reportedly, the Houthis, Ansar Allah, has closed off the Bab al-Mandab. And so now that one's closed off too. Well, Jesse Waters here wants to say, ha-ha, we've got something for you. We'll make another pipeline.
Iran's terrorizing the Strait because it's their only leverage. But they're going to lose that leverage, not just because of U.S. air power, but because Gulf countries are skipping the Strait. Iraq just visited the White House, and they signed off on Chevron finishing a pipeline from Baghdad to Syria into the Mediterranean. Iran won't be able to clip any tankers because the tankers will be off the coast of Greece. Chevron's also going to drill baby drill in southern Iraq. And ConocoPhillips just took a huge stake in Iraqi oil. Remember Trump said we should have taken the oil? Well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Now, just we'll start with that one first, because that's just more to the humiliation and shame of America. Because there's Jesse Waters bragging about how President Trump once said we should have taken their oil, meaning Iraq, and he also said that about Syria. And he's like saying, ha, we came around, we took the oil. And now here we're basically trying to colonize Iraq again. That's certainly the impression here, that not just the ConocoPhillips and these others are coming in to help the country of Iraq out. No, we're coming to take their oil, as Jesse Waters just said there. But there's also some other things. He's citing this pipeline as though that's some magic card to get away from the Iranian side. First of all, there already is a pipeline from Iraq into the Mediterranean. It's called the Kirkuk. It's pronounced Cheyenne, the Kirkuk Cheyenne. That's the one in green there you see on the top. And then the one he's talking about there is another one, the Kirkuk Vanias Rehabilitated Pipeline. That's that one with the number one on it you see there in the middle of the screen with it's kind of this brown color. That's the one they're talking about. Just a little bit of word on that. He's number one. He's talking about like that's something that's going to have anything to do at all with the current war. Number one, this has been out of, I think it started in service in the 1950s, if I'm not mistaken. And then it went, had a lot of problems. And I think in 2003, it went dormant. And there was a lot of political reasons, a lot of geology. I think the Iraq war had something to do with why that had stopped. But then it never started back again. And for two decades, they've been squabbling among the regional powers, trying to come up with some way to get it done again and turned back on. And now then they say they're going to do that. But at best case, it will take between 2 and 3 years to get bring back online. Maybe it will have as many as 2 million barrels a day capacity. We'll see if that happens. But they've been trying for two decades to get it done. And just because they have a photo op in President Trump with President Trump in the Oval Office, don't think that it's going to be magic beans and that's just going to suddenly materialize. It will literally have no impact whatsoever on this war. But here's the other thing. Just like the Yanbu port that goes into the Red Sea, just like every one of these pipelines, unless it is buried very deeply underground, anything can be hit with a missile. And by the way, the big issue is not even so much the pipelines, even if they bury it, but unless you also bury all of your facilities, all of your reprocessing facilities, all of your performance, all your pumping, everything. Everything is about the pumping stations themselves. Unless you put all of that underground, it's got a fixed address, folks, and that means any missile can be programmed at that close range. I mean, just take a look at how close the Kirkuk oil field is. It's literally right across the border from Iran. So, I mean, they can almost throw a hand grenade at that. So having a pipeline is meaningless if all it takes is to shoot a drone. I mean, you don't even have to have an expensive missile. You can just shoot a drone at that thing. Take it out anytime. That's what's going on with this war right now. That's all the stuff that we're hitting, a lot of the Iranian infrastructure. Iran's hitting the GCC infrastructure. And all of this is happening so far because of missiles and drones. We've shown you images, a lot of that. So it doesn't matter about the pipelines. And now you see, even though the one that's going into the Red Sea, now that's been curtailed and they haven't even hit the pipeline. Iran could at any time, and they have demonstrated this. They showed, I want to say it was 2016. I can't remember the exact year, but allegedly it was the Houthis. But with Iranian control, they hit one of the oil reprocessing. For a while, it took about 5% of global processing, oil processing offline. It was a pretty big deal. And when the dust cleared, there was a lot of these really big circular devices, facilities on top. There was like 6 or 8 of them in a row. And they all had pinpoint holes in the top of them where missiles went in and hit precisely what they were shooting at. So Iran demonstrated then, and it was common knowledge that that was the Iranians that actually knocked that out. They can knock out anything like that. So if you think you're going to have some pipeline and now you don't have to go through the Strait of Hormuz, guess what? That still doesn't matter because at any time there's an issue, they just hit a button, fire a missile, or shoot a drone. I mean, it's that simple. So this arrogant attitude that we're talking about, that we're going to somehow bypass them, it's not going to happen for years if it even does happen. And then even if that comes into account, that doesn't help you. So if you're predicating your arrogance on something that you're going to have in the future that won't matter, then you're setting yourself up and us along with you for a lot of trouble. Let's go on to the next thing here. Oh, this next one is really great. We're going to try to resurrect something that we tried and talked about a lot in the first couple of weeks of this war, but then got dismissed because it failed utterly even to materialize. And that is, we're going to get somebody else's troops to do something, not in Iran in this case, but inside of Lebanon.
The War Department is looking to train, equip, and vet elite army units in Lebanon to go in and purge and disarm Hezbollah for good. This keeps Israel from having to do the dirty work, which Lebanon likes quite a bit.
Okay, first of all, the elite troops in Lebanon, I mean, have you not paid any attention at all? And are all of your viewers like mushrooms? Because listen, Lebanon has been trying to get Hezbollah subdued for decades, for a long time. And then this year it is in foreign policy. It says the U.S. And let's see, this one was, I think it was earlier this year, the U.S. war on Iran has put the Lebanese government in a bind. It can neither protect Lebanon from Israel nor disarm Hezbollah. And there's a reason why, because some of the insistence on Iran, I'm sorry, on Israel and the United States is that the Lebanese military that we allowed to exist, and we do allow it to exist, and that's the reason why President Aoun was in the White House, is because they basically are a puppet of the West. Well, here's the problem with having a puppet, and we want to control so they're no threat to Israel. So basically, they're a constabulary force. Their military is some guys on a truck that have rifles. That's about the extent of it. They don't have any kind of a modern air force, armored force. They don't have any of that stuff because they're not allowed to. Therefore, they don't have the military capacity to actually disarm anybody. And it's not a matter of training somebody. That's not the issue. It's the issue of having the capacity. And unless you're going to go in and fight for them, you can make them fight. But then that actually would get to another desire that the Israelis would be only too happy. That would reignite the civil war, the Lebanese civil war that was in effect for 15 years. Everybody in Israel knows good and well, if we made good on that and send this elite force in there, all it would be doing was reigniting a civil war, pitting the government and the military of Lebanese that we allow to exist against Hezbollah. And that would be fine with Israel. They're cool with that. The last thing that they want is any kind of stability or peace. Because there's a reason why Secretary Rubio signed that document with Lebanon and Israel, without Iran, without Hezbollah, because they want to have a separate situation which guarantees Israel will never withdraw from Lebanon. That's what they want. That's what that agreement was supposed to ensure, and that's what this would assure. If that's more than just him talking, Jesse Waters, if he's repeating anything that's in the White House, just understand that's the intent. They're trying to restart the civil war so that now Israel can say, well, there's too much chaos on the border. We can't leave now. If they had only disarmed, everything would have been fine. But since they didn't, well, we can't leave, so we have to protect our people. That's what's going on here. That's the reality of it. And then lastly here, we have the one testy exchange here with Senator Peters and Secretary of War Hegseth over, is there a strategy?
You don't have a strategy. You don't have a long-term plan to actually win this war. Win the war. The men and women are going to be able to do it, but they need to have leadership. When will you show leadership?
We have leadership.
When will you show leadership?
Why don't you show some leadership and stand up for your fellow Democrats who won't fund the troops, who stand and play partisan politics while you don't give us the money? You want to stand up here and talk about the troops? You won't show any political courage to actually fund our department because you have Trump derangement syndrome and can't actually commit to anything meaningful.
Okay. The poor Secretary Hegseth, poor U.S. military. Nobody wants to give them any money. Oh, wait. They got $1 trillion in this current fiscal year. And he may not have been aware. He did. Of course, he's lying. There is a $350 billion reconciliation request that is on the table right now in Congress. And that by itself is very deceptive because basically what that is this, they don't want to give a sticker shock to America to go from $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion for next FY. So they say, we'll go to $1.15 trillion for next year, and then we'll get a reconciliation bill of $350 billion now, even before we get there. So what a shock. We still end up with $1.5 billion. And he wants to cry that we don't have enough money. And by the way, why would I want to fund something that has failed and will continue to fail? That's what Congress is supposed to do. They're supposed to put this oversight on. Now, unfortunately, I can't come too much to the defense of Senator Peters because he's still saying he just wants a strategy to win. Show me, where is your strategy to win? Win the war. The war can't be won. He doesn't have a strategy to win because there is no strategy to win, because the military task cannot be accomplished just with bombs. That's what we've been trying to do. Air power and naval power, all of it has to do with either missiles or bombs. We can't win it. The country is as big as much of Western Europe, for God's sake. It's like five times bigger than Iraq. Bigger. And the terrain is much more formidable. The military is much more formidable than the one that we faced in 1991 in Iraq or 2003 in Iraq, for that matter. All of the terrain, all the mountain ranges and everything else, the way the whole geography of the country is arrayed is like a defender's paradise and an attacker's nightmare. So even if we had a field army, we would still impale ourselves and be destroyed piecemeal if we tried to go through the mountains. We're not going to. Number one, we don't have that military. But it doesn't matter. You can't win it with air power only against that target set, especially when they have foreseen this for decades and had the underground facilities, which you can't get at unless you go in and try to root them out, which you can't do because you can't get through the mountains, which you can't do because you don't have a damn army of that size anyway. And it would be foolhardy to the highest order to sacrifice hundreds of thousands of troops for something that doesn't even affect our national security. So that is your big problem. You didn't hear anybody in the Senate, that at least anybody that I saw, made that statement. You certainly didn't hear Jesse Waters because he is too busy cheerleading the war. And, of course, I could do the same thing with General Jack Keane, General Kellogg, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley. For some reason, she's been brought out of retirement, I guess. She's been dusted back off, put out in the bullpen. She's active in there. A number of others. Dan Hoffman is one, a former CIA guy. All these people just coming out of the woodwork, everybody cheering the war on. And the war can never be won. I think we've established that by now. And it's just painful, painful for me to watch, to understand why are we doing this when the cost is not just the potential destruction of our economy, because we're going down. The price of oil has continued to go up today. I showed you earlier that the spot price, the actual price for a barrel of oil today, not the futures market that you see, which is also going up now, but that was at $130 earlier today. I don't know what it is right now, but $130. And that's what you're actually paying for oil. $130. We hide that. We don't talk about it in public, but that's already happened. And then, of course, you had that dignified transfer earlier today. And of course, that's what I care a lot about. Those four service members died for nothing. 18 of them have died for nothing so far. Apparently, there's quite a number that are still in intensive care from what some reports are coming out. Over 500 have been wounded to one degree or another. We don't even know about TBI, traumatic brain injuries, or any PTSDs that's starting to start. And listen, one of the things he also said on that broadcast, which I didn't put on here, is he claimed that morale in the U.S. armed forces in the region is sky high. That is complete crap. That's not true at all. I don't know. Maybe some of them are pretty excited, but I can tell you from knowledge that I've got from somebody who has direct access to the men themselves that they're going crazy. They're pulling their hair out because they're going, what are we doing? We get this mission and then we get it pulled back and then we get that mission and then it gets pulled back and then we are given this mission here and stuff that doesn't make any sense. And they see, like I did when I was in Afghanistan, like I did when I was in Iraq, you can see on the ground, the people who were there, this is not an attainable mission. They know it. They know what those mountains can do. Remember all that wreckage we left there in front of one of the sites where we allegedly went to rescue a pilot. Don't know if that's what it was or not, but whatever it was, we were in there and we lost two C-130 type aircraft and then four helicopters. And we didn't accomplish anything other than getting out the people who went in, allegedly, without any casualties or losses. We'll see in the future if that turned out to be the truth or if we were being lied to, because we're lied to all the time, officially, by Central Command, by the Pentagon, by the White House. So I can't take anything at face value. The only thing we can take at face value is when you see caskets come off the tarmac there at Dover Air Force Base. That's real. Can't hide that one, because we've seen it right there. And there are families grieving right now. And there's going to be more if we keep going down this path. I just, for the life of me, can't understand why anybody is going to want to push this to keep going into a war we can't win, where the cost is going to be profound, both in blood and in treasure and in the economy for our whole country. That's what really, really puzzles me. And it's just anguishing to watch. It's like watching a 10-car pileup on an interstate, you know, at like 70 miles per hour in slow motion. And you see the cars, you see what's happened. You're like, at regular speed, they're gonna crash. There's no way around it. And you can't do anything to stop it. You're just watching. That's how it feels right now. This stuff is just inevitable. The fundamentals are what they are, and you can't change them any more than you can change the physics of a car going at 70 miles an hour and hitting a stationary object or another moving vehicle. That's just what's going to happen. But at least now you're aware. So I just want to make sure that people see that they are being lied to on the mainstream media and by the White House, by the Pentagon, by members of Congress. Almost nobody is telling the truth here. We're going to keep telling you the truth until this multi-car pileup starts manifesting. And then none of you are going to be surprised. Maybe more people will pay attention then. We'll have to wait and see. But we appreciate you guys. Appreciate you watching. And we'll see you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.